Thank you, and well done everybody on Slido. You did really well. Lots of upvoting, lots of brilliant questions, and thank you for the questions at home. Where are the cameras? Are the cameras out there? Well done at home, especially to Ollie. Hello, Ollie. Jeremy wants to speak to you, and he wants you to know about hope, and not a hope against hope, not wishful thinking. He wants us all to have an earthed, grounded, realistic, physical, embodied hope in life that goes on forever. Is that possible? Is it possible in the face of death to believe in life? Life to the full now and life ongoing even beyond the grave. Is that even possible? That sounds like pie in the sky when you die. Isn't that what Marx said? Christianity is just pie in the sky when you die. We say no. We say we have an earthed, embodied, realistic hope in the face of death. But what could possibly make you believe that? What would make you believe? I once asked an atheist friend of mine, what would make you believe? And he said, quick as a flash, he must have been asked the question before, because he had, on a hair trigger, an answer for me. I would believe, he said, if God rearranged the stars in the heavens and made them spell out the Ten Commandments, then I would know there was a God. And instantly, I had two different thoughts about how I should respond to him, which is extraordinary for me. I average about two thoughts per month, really. But two synapses fired at once, and one synapse was basically to answer my friend by saying, well, did you know the current arrangement of the stars is already pretty miraculous? And it is. The current harmony of the heavens out there and the earth here, and doubters and skeptics here that are looking around at this rationally ordered, rationally comprehensible universe, that's already a miracle. To have this current arrangement of the heavens, to have a life-permitting universe is an improbable kind of a feature of reality. It's so much more improbable than just having a bunch of stars spell out some Hebrew letters. That would be a sideshow compared to the miracle that you and I are already living in. That was the kind of direction that I was going to go in. That was the kind of answer I was going to give him. But then I paused, and I didn't give that answer because a different synapse fired. And the other synapse was telling me, no, ask him this question. And this is the question I asked him. If God spelled out the Ten Commandments in the sky, would you like such a God? And he said, oh no, I could never like God. But if he proved his existence, then I'd have to grudgingly bow the knee. And at that point, myself and my friend, we had great common ground, because neither of us particularly liked the God he disbelieved in, right? I didn't have any time for the gods that he disbelieved in either. I believe in someone quite different to that. Let's have a look at John's Gospel. We've got these John's Gospels for you. If you don't have a copy of the Bible, or if you don't know where your copy of the Bible is, pick one up from us. And we'd love you to read this eyewitness account of who Jesus is, what he did when he walked planet Earth, how he died on the cross, and how he rose again. Because we believe that Jesus is the Son of God who came down into the valley of the shadow of death. The one who made all things entered that valley of the shadow of death to be with us, to be for us. Our belief is Jesus pioneered a way through death, and he came out the other side. Do you know how Psalm 23 ends? Psalm 23, though it begins, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, it ends with a grand feast on a mountaintop, and the psalmist says, my cup runneth over. Do you know that ending to the psalm? We go down into the valley, and we end on a high. Is that true? Christians believe Jesus pioneered that path down into death and up into life, so that you and I, if we put our hand into his hand, he will get us through the valley of the shadow and out into feasting joy. Do you believe that? Well, one of Jesus' followers, called Thomas, did not believe that. For 1 week, Thomas had doubts. And for the next 2,000 years, he's been known as Doubting Thomas. Poor guy, right? I mean, Peter denied Jesus 3 times, and we don't call him denying Peter, but poor Thomas, he doubts for like 7 days, and he's called Doubting Thomas. And the reason was, he wasn't there when Jesus first appeared on Easter Sunday. I don't know what he was doing, he was watching Netflix or something, but he wasn't there. And all his other friends, all the other followers of Jesus, the disciples, were saying, "We've seen Jesus. He's risen again." And I wonder what you would have said in those circumstances. You might have said exactly what Thomas said. Prove it. What's going to make you believe? What's going to make Thomas believe? Let's have a look at the story. Now, Thomas, also known as Didymus, which means the twin, he was one of the 12. He was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." Okay? What would make you believe? Okay? What would make you believe? I don't know if stars rearranging in the heavens is where you set the bar for belief. That would be to set the bar at galactic heights. Where do you set the bar? Interestingly, Thomas doesn't look to the stars. Thomas looks to the scars. He wants to see the scars of Jesus. And you might think he's being a little bit sick here. I mean, if I was in hospital and, you know, you come visit me in my ward, and if you start to say to me, "Unless I put my hand inside your wounds, I don't believe you're ill." Honestly, you do not have visiting rights. Just go away. Leave the grapes and go. You're sicker than I am. If that's what you need, if you need that level of proof. But what's Thomas doing here? He's not just being sick. He doesn't just want to know that there is a God up there in the heavens, a God who is above all our suffering. He wants to know whether there's a God who has entered our suffering, who has gone through our suffering and can offer hope beyond our suffering. He wants to know whether God has a scar story. Do you have a scar story? Everyone's got a scar story, don't they? Or 3 or 4 scar stories, I'm sure. Maybe you could share your scar stories if they are church ready, right? But we've all got these stories, don't we? How does a scar story go? A scar story begins, "Everything was going along just hunky-dory until I encountered the force of gravity, a cricket ball. I found my way onto the black run at the skiing," or whatever it was. And suddenly, crash, bang, wallop. And you describe how very, very painful it was. But then you say, "It's okay, I'm better now. And I have the scar to prove the story." Isn't that how a scar story goes? Everything's fine. Then I hit the crisis, the catastrophe. I endured the scar, and now I'm better, but the scars prove the story. Isn't it astonishing to know that God has a scar story? Did you know the God who made you, the God who made the world, has a scar story? It's the ultimate scar story. And the ultimate scar story goes like this. Once upon a time, everything was just hunky-dory. Until God encountered humanity. That was the catastrophe, right? He comes down into our midst, into our mess, to be with us and to be for us. But what did we do to God when he joined us in our midst and in our mess? I was once speaking to a student and describing to her the wonder of Jesus Christ. I said, "Isn't it amazing that in the face of Jesus, we get to see what God is like? And wouldn't it be astonishing if you opened up John's Gospel and you read through it, you could see what it's like when God shows up on planet Earth? And maybe you'd even want to invite Jesus into your own life," I said. And she said, "Oh, I wouldn't be doing that." I said, "But wouldn't it be wonderful if God showed up in your life?" She said, "No, it would be very inconvenient." I said, "What do you mean inconvenient?" She said, "Well, I've got my plans. I've got my life. I'm very happy with my life the way it is. If God shows up, he might have other ideas. It would be very inconvenient if God showed up. And you know what? She was just being honest. We all kind of feel that way, don't we? If God actually showed up in our midst and in our lives, he will have probably a very different agenda to our agenda. God is the sort of God who gives himself in sacrificial love, and he might want to sweep you up into that same life of self-giving sacrificial love. That's not the way we roll. We want to keep ourselves to ourselves. We want to serve our own selfish little interests. If God shows up, it would be very inconvenient. And if you read through John's gospel, you'll see just how inconvenient humanity found it when God showed up. Jesus shows up and we put him to death. We silence him. We don't actually naturally want God. But this still is part of God's scar story. He knew we would be like that. And still he embraced us. Even as we cause the scars, he's got his arms wide open to the world in love. And he dies for our sinful rebellion, for our selfishness on that cross. He dies for all the ways that we make the valley of the shadow dark. You see, we might walk through the valley of the shadow, but we also darken the valley of the shadow, don't we? We might experience suffering, but we also add to the suffering out there in the world, don't we? I do, through my selfishness. But what does Jesus do? Jesus embraces us even in that selfishness and sin, takes it on himself on the cross, and endures those scars, endures the judgment that our sins deserve. And then he pioneers a path through death and out the other side. I've said this many times before. Jesus is like the needle who pierces through the black shroud of death. And he comes out the other side. And we, if we are like the thread, if we are like those who are connected to Jesus, he can pull us through that very same path, through the valley of the shadow, and out the other side. And Thomas, He wants to put his fingers on that very place where Jesus went through death and came out the other side. He wants to experience God's own scar story. He wants to know that there's a God who's not just up there in the stars, but a God of the scars. And you know, that's so precious, isn't it? As Jeremy pointed us to Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, but Bonhoeffer, just before he was hanged by the Nazis, only a suffering God can help us. There is this sense that if we are to walk through the valley of the shadow, and if we are to believe in God up above, how do you put those two things together? It seems like such a contradiction, doesn't it? A suffering world and a God of love. Could those two things possibly go together? Well, look at the God who has a scar story. Look at that God. Christians are not asking you to make believe in fairies and puppies and rainbows and flowers. And we want you to look at a God who has scars. Because for the Christian, the God of love and the valley of suffering are not two different things. The God of love descended into the valley of suffering. And we know the God of love best when we see him plumb the depths of our suffering. For the Christian, it's not a case of there's a God of love on one hand and a suffering world on the other. God and suffering come together in Jesus. Is this the God that you can believe in? This is the God that Thomas could believe in. A week later, verse 26, halfway down, a week later, the disciples were in the house again. And Thomas was with them this time. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." I do love that peace be with you. Because if you know anything about the story in John's gospel, all these men had deserted, denied, or betrayed him in his hour of need. Isn't that interesting? You know, Jesus comes and he wants to embrace us in love. And what do we do? Even the best of the best, even the cream of the crop, desert, denial, betray Jesus in his hour of need. And so what does Jesus do? Jesus pioneers this path through death, comes out the other side. He raises up from the grave and he confronts his worthless followers who've deserted, denied, and betrayed him. He tracks them down from beyond death. And what does he say? Peace. Isn't that beautiful? Peace. What did they do to deserve peace? Nothing. They'd left him to die. They'd hung him out to dry. What does Jesus say? Peace. That's what Jesus is like. Is this the God that you could trust? A God with battle scars. A God who's gone to hell and back for you and then proclaims peace. Is this a God you can trust? This is the only God you can trust. This is the only one you can trust. You see, we all have to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. All of us. The silliest thing to do is to deny this God, to simply reject this God, and to say to this God, because of the valley, I can't believe in you. Don't do that. That won't solve the problem of the valley. It just means you now have to walk it alone. But Jesus doesn't want you to walk it alone. He showed up in the midst of that suffering to be with you, to be for you, and to lead you out. Peace be with you, said Jesus. And then he said to Thomas, Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. He handles Thomas's doubts so tenderly, don't you think? He even meets Thomas in his ridiculous requirement. He even sort of, oh, you need to see my scars? Is this enough? But then he says, it's time to stop with those doubts. You had your time of doubt. It's time to stop now. Not that Thomas would never again have a question about the faith. Not that Thomas again would have his entire faith tied up in a bow and it was all very symmetrical. And no, I'm sure Thomas would go on to have many questions about life and the universe and everything and why is God doing this and why is God doing that. But at the fundamental level, Jesus says, will you trust me with all the things that you don't know? Will you trust me? With all the questions that you will still have, can you trust me with them? And Thomas, seeing the scar story of God, seeing the God who's gone to hell and back for him, seeing the peace of Christ, what does Thomas say? Thomas said to him, my Lord and my God. What's Thomas looking at when he says, my Lord and my God? He's not looking at the stars. He's looking at the scars. He's looking at these war wounds of endless love. He's looking at Jesus, and he's saying to himself, you are Lord and you are God. And I wonder if even tonight you've come to see that about Jesus. Or maybe over the course of the last few weeks or months, you've been starting to investigate Jesus, and you've started to think, I think Jesus might be Lord. I think he might be God. That's what happened to me. I was aged about 20, and a friend of mine challenged me to read through the Gospels, and we met up together, and we read through Matthew, the first biography of Jesus, and then Mark, the second biography of Jesus, and then Luke, the third biography of Jesus. And I remember getting halfway through Luke, and like Thomas, I'd had my period of doubt. But it just got so overwhelming. At some point, halfway through Luke's gospel, I just looked at Jesus, and I looked at his towering personality, his stooping love, and I just thought to myself, you are it. You are tops. I started articulating this to the friend who I was reading the Gospels with. He says, what are you making of Jesus? I think he's it. I think he's tops. I think he's head honcho. I think he's... And my friend said, would you say he's Lord? And I said, yeah, sure, he's Lord. And my friend was like, ha, bad luck, you're a Christian now. It's the way it happens. It just sneaks up on you, right? There's a verse in Romans chapter 10. It says, if you confess with your lips that Jesus is Lord and you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you're saved, right? You confess with your lips, Jesus is Lord. You believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. Is that you tonight, maybe? Maybe you've started to see, okay, I think Jesus is head honcho, numero uno, big cheese, number one. Is he Lord? And do you think God raised him from the dead? And maybe you think, oh, I don't know. Don't know about that. Well, just ask yourself, if he is confronting you now with living power, he's not just a dead teacher, is he? If he, through his word, is confronting you now with living power, he is someone who has conquered the grave. Do you think Jesus is Lord? Do you think God raised him from the dead? You might have all sorts of further questions. If so, Christianity Explored is the place for you. You can ask those questions. You yourself won't be put on the spot, but you can put us on the spot. You can ask whatever questions you like. So if you're not ready to say that Jesus is Lord, come along to Christianity Explored. Keep exploring. But for some of you, you are ready. You're ready to say Jesus is Lord. That doesn't mean you don't have any questions. You should still go to Christianity Explored. You should still ask your questions from within the Christian faith. That's great. I've still got lots of questions. Jeremy's still got lots of questions. But maybe you want to start asking those questions from the inside of Christian faith, knowing that Jesus is Lord. And if that's you, I think a great thing to do is just make a start with Jesus. I'm going to offer some words of prayer in just a minute where you can say to Jesus, I think you are Lord. I want you to be my Lord. And I want you to walk with me through this valley, lead me, and into your deathless, immortal hope. Should we all bow our heads and let me offer some words of prayer? The words I pray, they're not magic, but you might want to echo them in your heart as one way of responding to Jesus. Lord Jesus, it is hard here in this valley of the shadow. And I'm sorry for the ways I make the darkness worse. I suffer, but I also cause suffering. And I'm sorry. Thank you for coming. Thank you for dying. And thank you for rising again. Please forgive me for all my sins. And come into my life as my Lord and my God. Lead me through this valley into your glorious future.